This 1UP podcast is brought to you by Games for Windows. Welcome to Better PC Gaming. Created with the idea that gaming should deliver more. Games for Windows branded titles bring you all the fun of gaming without all the work. And with the hottest titles around and Windows Vista compatibility, Games for Windows promises to deliver great new gaming experiences every time you play.
Hello? Hello? Attention, if you can hear this, please do not turn this off. My name is Dr. Norbert Jeske. I'm a scientist. I am recording this from the year 2152. And we have made a very important discovery. We've discovered a tape here. It's labeled GFW Radio, June 12th, 2007. And we believe that it holds the key to fixing everything that's gone wrong in the world for the last 100 years. It was on this day, on June 12th in 2007, that everything went wrong. That's when the monsters came. It's when the dinosaurs came back. It's when everything terrible that's happened to everybody's skin. And so this is what we're doing. This is our desperate attempt. What we're planning on doing, my robot friend and I, is we're going to take this tape. We're going to use the time machine that we've built. And we're going to go back. We're going to go back and post this in hopes that once it's up and people can hear this podcast now that they couldn't before, that it will fix everything. We want things to be the way they were before. We want our skin back. So please, if you're listening to this in 2007, please, it's going to sound odd. It sounds like somehow this was in the middle of a podcast. The whole thing isn't here anymore. We don't know what happened now. It's 100 years later. But just listen to what's here now. And maybe if you listen to this small excerpt of this lost podcast, the world can once again be the way it was meant to be. Please, for God's sakes, listen to this outtake. Good luck and Godspeed to you all. May humanity live on.
So after an equipment malfunction, we don't know where we're at. We're going to back this shit up a little bit.
All right.
We're going to jack it up.
We had technical difficulties, sir.
New laptop, everyone.
Let's just go on. We'll move on to another question.
All right.
Okay, this is a good one, I think. Iscariot83 asks, to what extent do we think that RPG gameplay elements, gaining levels, increasing stats and abilities, and upgrading equipment are a fundamental part of the massive multiplayer experience? It's hard to imagine an MMO where people don't have some sort of increasing abilities throughout the game, but at the same time, people have been enjoying Counter-Strike and Halo for years, and nobody's found an epic shotgun or leveled up their hit points. So once broadband technology is enough to handle it, do you think that pure action gameplay will translate into a persistent, unified online world, or are action MMOs going to always rely on instant combat and stat tracking? Or do people fundamentally need some sort of levels that justifies the time they put into the game? In short, are MMOs fundamentally tied to RPG gameplay elements?
Huh.
I would, like, the first thing that comes to mind for me, maybe to get started, is that I don't think it's so much, well, especially now as we're seeing, you know, games like, or we're hearing about, you know, games like Huxley and The Crossing and just basically all, you know, even PlantSide, all these new versions of massive multiplayer environments and stuff. It's not so much the technology, the bandwidth, as the design of MMOs as they are now reflects just the time, the man hours that people are able and willing to put in into designing gameplay for, right? And the best way to keep people playing or to create a ton of content is to create basically leveling. Just the same content, change the colors on it, add some new items, and basically change the names by saying you're a different level now and by saying that the Scarizard is now a Red Scarizard or whatever.
Yeah, levels and stats are a way to, like, tell you where you're supposed to be currently in the game universe. Mm-hmm. So if you got, like, this vast giant world, allegedly, then, like, if you're level 12, you're allowed to be in this chunk of the vast giant world right now.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if instead of saying, well, we're going to spend, you know, 100,000 hours making a game that you could play for 1,000 hours, they're still going to spend however many hours they did, but find a way to make it so that what they made is going to last you, you know. I mean, it's different. I'm not saying they make the same game, but I fundamentally, this is just basic. I don't think it's controversial. The way MMOs are designed now reflects the need to keep people playing and have a bunch of content. And you can't do that by being a specialist. You have to be a generalist and just say, we could take different backgrounds and stuff, but this fundamental experience of going up and clicking on things has got to work the way it is. You know, you're not going to have the variety of like of what you'd experience over the course of Half-Life 2 every time you play this game, day in and day out for the course of a year, so that you've got 1,000 hours, each as unique as every hour in Half-Life 2, you know.
I just think there's always going to be both kinds of games, because really they just can appeal to not just different gamers, but people who maybe like both but want to play a different kind of game at a different time. You know, I don't think, I mean, yeah, they're part of the reason that there haven't been good action-based MMOs has been technology and bandwidth and everything. But even if you make all that equal, I think you're still going to get people who would still rather just prefer a level grind over shoot 'em up, right?
Or if rather than the shoot 'em up, like say, what if the combat were, you know, even as engaging as Devil May Cry, or take it down a notch from that and say is like God of War or something. That I think is maybe that's even too demanding for some people who really want to just be in there and because you're not going to be having an elaborate talk with your guildmates and stuff if you're like worrying about hitting the right combos at the right time, precisely the right time. And I know that need exists in high level play and in raiding and stuff like that in World of Warcraft specifically. But for most instances, pre raiding stuff, it sounds like you can just go in and we could talk about what we want on the pizza, on the best pizza in the world, and still kill like whatever Red Skarsgård's coming out of.
That's a pretty safe thing to say that if you're playing with more than one person in WoW, like it's a super easy game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because most of the game is tuned for one person to handle. So if you got two people doing the same stuff, then it's really no big deal.
Yeah. Right. More questions, Ryan? Do you want to?
Yeah, read some, Ryan.
I'm looking. I can't decide.
Pick one.
Hard.
Throw a dart.
Here's one right here. Smythe.
See, you snoozed and losed.
Damn it.
Says there are at least three games being made into movies for release this fall. Dungeon Siege, Hitman, and Postal, but there's one game with a story that practically cries out to be filmed.
Zelda?
Half-Life.
Oh.
Is there or has there been any talk about making a Half-Life movie? Also, if you're going to cast the major roles in the film, who would you cast? So the last I heard from Gabe Newell at Valve was that, of course, they had been approached by, you know, from multiple angles about making a Half-Life movie. But obviously, they're very, very picky with their baby and what happens to it, and nothing has impressed them in the least bit there. So as of that talk a year ago, there was definitely nothing in the works, although they have those discussions. Clearly, I mean, you have a property like that, you're going to be having those discussions.
Yeah. Well, two of those games on your list were a UE Bowl production.
Right. So they hardly count.
Aren't all three of them? Who's doing Hitman?
Oh, maybe. Is he
Hitman?
Hitman?
I don't think Hitman is.
Why would you want to see a movie of any of these, including Half-Life? I wouldn't even want to see a Half-Life movie. That'd be like
a nerd. I kind
of
would.
It'd be like Doom. I mean, like the thrill of
there's
Half-Life.
A lot more to Half-Life.
There's a lot
than Doom.
More. Okay, to Half-Life you're right. That's not a fair comparison because Half-Life did have a great story and does have a great story, and it has a cool universe. But we've experienced it already in the game as Gordon Freeman.
It's all about the extended experience now, Jeff. And if you're not watching, reading the Heroes comic strips, you're not.
Okay, so let's cast Gordon Freeman then.
Yeah.
Jack Black.
Ryan. Ryan Scott.
He just ruined it.
Ryan Scott.
Oh,
Ryan,
yeah,
Scott.
Ryan Scott as Gordon
you
Freeman.
You just ruined it. Yeah, Jack Black. Get out of that shit, dude.
How's that? Kidding you.
What would be the game would he be a good fit for?
Jack Black?
Booger Man.
Hey, Jack Black's a gamer.
So he should be in all video game movies.
Yeah, because he knows. He'd understand. No, who would? They asked us a question. Who should play Gordon Freeman?
I don't
Come on,
really
we're the gaming ultimate gaming authority.
Because I generally don't spend my time thinking about, you know, wouldn't he be wonderful?
Edward Norton.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah,
that would work.
That's pretty good.
There you go.
This guy I used to work with would have been perfect.
Oh, great.
Oh, okay. Dan Fitzpatrick. Is that who you meant?
No.
Some of them are already cast. Like,
he's an art director over at Future. He looks
Morgan Freeman
like,
for Eli Vance, you
Gordon
know?
Freeman.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh, yeah, sure.
What else?
How about the,
Alex?
Chick?
Yeah,
Alex. Michelle Rodriguez.
What?
God, that would be bad. Jeff, you're like, let's, well, Jeff, just keep going, actually.
Okay.
Give us your all-star cast.
All right, we got Jack Black as Gordon Freeman.
Yeah.
Michelle Rodriguez is Alex.
Yeah.
And what's her dad's name? What's his name?
We got, go for Barney.
He's the one you said was. Yeah, but that's in your cast. In mine, it's, wait, you said.
No, I didn't say, I said you got to cast Barney. I didn't cast Barney yet.
Well, no, but you casted Morgan Freeman as what's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah, but in my version, the part played by Morgan Freeman is played by the guy who played Raymond and Everybody Loves Raymond's brother, that big dude. Okay. I didn't
Come on, take this somewhere quick, man. You're
okay,
on the hot seat.
All right. I'm in the hot seat. So Barney?
Yeah.
Barney is, what's his name? Conan O'Brien's ex-sidekick, Andy Rickman. Andy Richter. Richter, not Rickman.
I don't know who any of those people are.
Shit. All right, let's move on.
This sounds like a winner.
This is why I'm not a casting
predicting
director.
The box office right now. Okay.
I was kidding about all those, by the way.
Here
you were.
don't lie.
What criteria, this is from Atomic Satchel. What criteria is used when sending a staff member to check out a game? Would you rather send a hardcore fan of the genre or someone completely new or neutral? I'm thinking there are benefits and downsides either way. Someone really into the games of a specific type might get caught up in the hype. On the other hand, a newcomer to the genre might not appreciate or understand what the developers are trying to do. I guess it could be that none of this matters and you send whoever has the availability to go.
I think he just answered the question.
I think he answered his own question all the way throughout that. No. Very perceptive question, though. Very.
Nobody looked at the that is always a.
We deal with that all the time.
Those are the stakes. You know
that's
I mean?
Part of what we deal here every
if
day.
If someone is too far into something, there is that danger that they're, you know. I mean, in cases, I guess ideally in cases like that, now and then we will work together on stories, you know.
Yeah.
And you have different perspectives and stuff. But it is, I mean, it is, yeah, it's give and take. Like you said, if you send me cover or like to take it away from me, if you send either you, Jeff, or Sean Malloy to cover World of Warcraft, you're getting the perspective of people that know the game very well and are going to be asking a different set of questions. They're going to be asking, I think, the sorts of questions that other people that are really into the game and other people that are going to buy the magazine based on that cover story are going to want to have asked.
Right.
At the same time, though, and it does work the other way where, you know, like Sean, you had this experience recently writing about Team Fortress 2 where you do go and you end up writing about it and you're asking an entirely different set of questions. And like, you know, when you came back from your visit, I was asking all the stuff. Well, what about this and this? And you're like,
right. It was all really specific.
No, I wasn't
like
really paying attention to that, but then you were able to offer a completely valuable perspective for everyone else. That's not me who isn't sitting there doing, you know, like old conk map jumps and stuff waiting and thinking about what it's going to be like to play this game again, you know, and both are valid. They obviously want both. I mean, the answer for who the game maker wants as his audience is always
everybody.
They can get, you know?
Right. Not just I think it's safe to say that we approach this question no matter what the article is, whether it's a preview or a review or whatever.
Right.
We're thinking about that a lot. You know, these decisions are never made lightly.
And there's the editorial process, which is always important. You know, I mean, if ever there's a case and someone comes back, you know, like now, rather than the cover story thing, I'll say, you know, if I'm editing a preview or any other story, and if something seems too uniformly glowing or positive, it's not like, hey, go and make this, like, negative. But it's like, are you considering these, you know, are you, like, considering these options and stuff? And we always go back and ask follow-up questions or something or someone. Or just, it could come from anyone. Someone might
That's right.
have another great question. And through the edit process, that goes back for another round. And you have that, and it adds, you know, that perspective ends up, even though it's still in the voice of the one writer who wrote it, you know, it's introduced into it that way. But never any, I mean, feel fortunate here. I mean, because of our sort of, you know, our ethic here and the way that we do things, and we have, you know, we have meetings and stuff and through email, we talk about, you know, and lunches and stuff. This is how, these are our expectations. We don't want to see this kind of thing. We think that this defines us, you know, these other practices we just don't want to have here. And so we just don't see that kind of thing where someone is entirely, I don't think we've had that where someone's entirely blinded by something.
and their appreciation for it to the extent that they're coming back a year away or a year or two away from release and saying that something is a potential game of the year contender, you know.
Well, I think when these things do crop up, and I agree with you, I don't think we're that bad, but I think when they do crop up in articles as we're going through the editing process, somebody else here on staff will call them on it.
Yeah. And there's cases where, I mean, yeah, there are stories that by the time they do go to readers, they've gone through, you know, four or five passes and entire rewrites at times, you know, where you say, like, really think that we could be a little more critical. That by critical, we don't mean just being negative, you know, but by again, all, I mean, at the very bare minimum, you have to ask the questions that you think with the degree of healthy and normal skepticism any non-dupe is going to have.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever have someone reading your book and they're asking questions like, why the hell didn't they ask them this? You know, it seems so obvious. Like, then you've kind of fucked up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to before we dwell on that too long. we'll go on to some other. We have GFW Radio Crew. This is Tempest 261. Serious question. Can you guys please stop mumbling? I always hear the first half of your sentence, the second half. Sean Malloy and Jeff are the worst offenders.
We are?
Sean Elliott is fine. Listen to the podcast while driving if you don't believe me, combined with a little noise. All right, whatever. So we got another letter.
So they say we mumble. Right.
I'm a mumbler.
I
will talk
joke.
Like this from now on.
That was a real letter, and I wanted to just keep going. I didn't realize. But since it said your name indicted you, you've got to stand up to it.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't mumble, and if you think so, fuck you.
Here's one. I think we can cover this quickly, but it's worth reading his question because he makes his own point, and I think it's a good one. LMN8R.
The Eliminator.
Do you think people vastly exaggerate the cost of PC gaming? In my opinion, they do. Look at a 360 and say $400 console, turn around and say $2,000 PC, completely ignoring one, the fact that TVs aren't free, and it's especially, of course, high definition and stuff, you know. Two, PCs are used for much more than just games. Three, upgrading a non-gaming PC to one capable of gaming usually only requires the addition of a $200 to $300 video card. And, of course, that depends on what you're working with there. You guys want to chime in? I just say, yeah, that's a point I make constantly, you know, especially definitely. Now that we've made the HD jump. And like, I go over to like, you know, you go over to Shoe's House or Mark McDonald's or something. I've got these Mongo HD TVs. On the TV world, I suck. I still got a, you know, like a round in the front. You know, the name for those anymore. It's just
that's
ass.
What I got.
We got a CRT. VCR built into it.
Yeah.
And for the audio, there's like one plug. You know, like even when you're using the two, like there's the stereo plug. There's one.
Do you have the wire hanger antenna still sticking out
actually,
the top there?
I did have that for a while until like girlfriend wanted to get cable. I didn't have cable TV for like 7 years.
We had to do that, and we had to turn the channel. The manual channel changer with a wrench.
Nice.
Because the thing fell off.
Right, but you had a really nice computer, though.
That was
all
back
the while.
In 1812.
I think the computer does more than play games argument is the most solid there. It's like, yeah, I'm using it for a lot more than just Half-Life 2.
So. You can play music on your PS3.
But you're not necessarily using all that power that you're paying for the quad core and for the 1,000-watt power supply and for, you know, 2 gigs of RAM and stuff to buy some shit off iTunes.
Right.
You know?
I've never gotten that into PC gaming that I needed to buy all the expensive stuff. I just can't afford it. So I'm pretty modest every time I buy a computer anyway.
The thing is getting used to not just accepting that you're not going to have the optimum settings for every game that comes out. You know, like, I played so many games on sub-optimum settings, and you just get used to it, and it doesn't matter if, like, the
game
is good.
Yeah, I'm not being anal about that kind of thing.
It doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, if I need to see something look really good, I just go into Darren's office.
Yeah.
Like, oh, so that's what that looks like. Cool.
I mean, a big concern for me is if it plays on my laptop.
Right.
Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So.
We have Doc Martin Abortion. The hell happened to the non-gaming podcast hinted at on a couple episodes ago?
I think you got it today for the first half.
You talked a lot about Walmart for you there, buddy.
and whatever, what a purple waterbed or an earthquake.
Yeah, that was a joke.
No, it wasn't.
The non-gaming podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That was a joke.
It was.
Haven't we said that enough times now on the boards?
But there's still
apparently
people that
not.
Are posting.
We were kidding.
Asking for the URL or where they can get
okay.
it.
Okay.
Well, they're searching for it on iTunes.
This is kind of the non-gaming podcast as well as the pod. It's two podcasts in one, kids.
Yeah.
We don't have time for more than that a week. Okay.
Ryan, you got anything? I have one to take us out on if you got it.
Ryan, you still have a chance.
Chance for what?
Damn.
Such hostility.
Now, read a question.
Huh?
Read a question.
He read all the good ones already. I got most of the same ones. Here's one from Colonel T. I don't know if we've talked about this on previous podcasts before or what, but he asks, how do people generally react when you tell them what you do for a living? I would imagine parents often tell you, oh, my son would be really good at your job. He loves those video games. Do you then want to smack the parent? I would want to smack the parent. Have you ever beat up someone for asking you what you do for a living? Have you ever just attacked someone on the street for no reason? Have you ever killed a boar with your bare hands, then consumed the raw flesh? Feel free to just answer the first question.
I think it's yes to all the above.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Gentlemen, yeah?
Yeah.
Who do I tell? Usually if I know that they're gamers, I'll say what I do. But if not, I'll say I'm a magazine editor and just leave it at that.
The problem definitely, with that is, definitely. Right, well, sometimes I'll say that, yeah, I work in a magazine.
And they'll ask what magazine.
And then I have to say, well, it's a video game magazine. And then it goes from like, oh, really? To, oh.
Right.
You know.
The one that I get a lot is like, oh, so you test games?
That's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah,
the
you
first
get that all
phase.
The time.
And my girlfriend's parents still do that.
And yeah. Even among yeah. gamers, you know, like it's happened to me before when it just comes up, you know, and I know that people are, we're even talking about in the first place because they're talking about that they're playing some recent game that came out or something. And they only understand it as, oh, you test games. And then the next level from that is you review games. And that's like all, but as though that were all you do.
You ever get right. that you make games too? Because I just got that yesterday, in fact. I was at a barbecue for my kid's school, so all the parents were there. And there's the same people every single damn time I've seen them. So what do you do again? You know, so somebody said yesterday, so how's it going making those games? Like, okay. Yeah. Again,
that's not as
don't
bad
make them.
You were at a barbecue?
Yeah.
Normally, in those circumstances, you'd think they would, like, nudge their kid and say, hey, this is Jeff, and he works with
Well,
video
some
games.
Of them do, and, like, I'm, you know, some of the, you know, the seventh grade boys in there think I have the coolest job in the world.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And then I'm going like, wow, this is our audience.
My landlord did that to me with, they have like a 4 or 5 year old and they're like, hey, he works with video games.
Yeah. It's
like, yeah. I mean, they just don't play,
like
so they don't get it.
He's the cool people. He plays Ronald McDonald. He does birthdays as Ronald McDonald on weekends.
Yeah, pretty much. Are you done tightening up those graphics yet, Jeff?
Yeah, I've had mixed reactions. The worst one I actually got was with the same group. My kids at a school in Berkeley, a private school, and you know we were away on a camping trip with all these parents, so we're all hanging out. And so you got your Berkeley intellectual parents there, or pseudo intellectual parents, all talking, and we were all talking around the grill. The dads, and one of the dads is a pediatrician who specializes in obese kids. And at this point, this was early on, and when we joined the school, and they didn't know what I did for a living yet. And so when we were all just sitting around talking, I said what I did.
Oh, you're the candy man.
Yeah, and the guy like went off on a thing. He's like, oh, so, you know, you're who I have to blame, who I have to thank for all of my clients, mm-hmm. all the obese kids that come in. I'm like, yeah, hi. No, I don't think so. I think we maybe blame the parents, okay? We don't blame the games. Again, do I have to have this conversation?
Wait, up with how do video games
Because kids are inside playing games and getting fat instead of outside exercise.
We could solve two problems by hooking up that doctor with a guy on our message board that was arguing that like all weight and body morphology is entirely as in 100% genetically determined.
Oh, God.
Like, those two arguing together, and then we'll just like slip out, you know?
Uh-huh. So I don't know about you guys, but I've encountered some negativity along those lines. Or my wife used to actually, she's a high school teacher, and she used to actually be more in academia. She was going for a PhD, and when we hung out with those people in particular, it was always a bad scene when it came up what I did. Then I was kind of like, oh, this is Ani's poor retarded husband. games.
You know? I got a very blue collar family, so it's kind of cool to most of them. Most of the time, though, yeah. If you have like one story, here's what I recommend: if you have like one story of one trip you did that you could latch onto, like I went to Britain to quote, talk to Angelina Jolie about the Tomb Raider movie. Mm-hmm.
You're a star.
Bring that one famous. Up. Bring that one up, and then suddenly, like, that's all people will talk about. I mean, it was like, I think I met her for 4 seconds.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that's all you need because it'll totally get derailed into something else.
The ones that got my family over it were things like, I appeared on NPR once. They interviewed me about, like, gaming violence or whatever. And then my dad called up, and he was, like, ecstatic. I heard you on NPR, Jeff. It's like, wow, you have, like, a real career. I'd already been here for, like, 7 years. Like, Dad, I'm running a magazine here. Isn't that good enough for you, Pop? Don't you love me?
It's interesting. I'm with you, Sean. Like, the parents are so, like, blue-collar that the notion – doesn't even matter what I write about. Like, if I was, like writing manuals or a tech writer or something, the fact that, like, someone in the family is, like, making money that doesn't involve, like, busting ass or doing something hard.
Running a printing press or whatever.
Yeah, like my dad, like his auto body, you know, he should have been retired a long time ago. He's still doing that stuff. But so it's like, it's easy for me. And instead, like, Jeff, you're in the position where you've got to, like, if games come up, you've immediately got to, like, ease him into talking about, like, maybe Civilization and various applications ways that can lead to nonlinear thinking and, you know, and stuff like that. And
that has never come up at a family event.
Yeah, no, they think I'm slumming with, like, kiddie shit is basically the basic attitude I'm dealing with most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at some point in that we've all encountered, you know, we've had that, like, basically use an out either way. Well, we didn't even have to really use an out. The only thing with, like, I'm assuming with your parents too, Sean, is just, like, keep them on the track that it's like, yeah, it's about you're not making games and you're not testing games, but you're writing about them.
They
you're
get it. They know what I'm doing, for sure. And you they think it's cool. So
you do just kind of hope when someone asks and you say I'm a magazine editor that they don't follow it up, and in their head they're thinking, like, The Atlantic. Or
exactly.
Harper's.
Yeah.
Like,
National Geographic?
When I was in Ireland, we went to a wedding. This is going to make me sound so hoity-toity, but it was like the groom was his father's the Belgian ambassador, so it was at the embassy there. It's really nice, and there's a big international group of people, of course, you know, from all over the continent. And I met another guy who's like, "Oh, I'm a managing editor of a magazine." I'm like, "Oh, cool. You know, what are you at?" And it's like Rolling Stone. And I'm like, "Oh, this is cool. We'll have an interesting conversation." It was like Rolling Stone Italy. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking, and immediately, like, there was a hierarchy there observed when I had to be like, "Yeah, like an enthusiast magazine for gaming," you know. So which immediately put me, and I was like, "This is going to be awkward, where I'm going to have to." You know, find ways to convince him that, like, that we have similar things. Right. And they might be there, like, and there were plenty, you know, like, when dealing with, you know, people are upset about an interview or something, or your review wasn't positive enough, so we're not going to let you interview the star. But because of, they're based on almost entirely non-endemic advertising, mm-hmm. so it's not, like, all advertisements for Justin Timberlake and shit. So if Justin Timberlake, his agents are like, you can't, and I'm making this up, this wasn't the artist who he mentioned or anything, they could be like, well, fuck you, you know, mm-hmm. we'll just go to Rolling Stone UK, mm-hmm. Rolling Stone France, have them translate the same interview you already gave to them, or otherwise, what are you going to do? You're just going to shut yourself out from coverage in like 16 different international markets, you know? But anyway, long story short, what was funny is by the time, halfway through the conversation, I asked what their subscriber base was. And I was like, score, when ours, like, outnumbered Rolling Stone Italy by, like, 4 or 5 times. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
So that immediately, like, lifted. Like, I know, exactly. But it immediately, like, still. The difference between the cash of the name Rolling Stone and GFW, like, it immediately, like, just the raw numbers, like, put me back into.
We need to consult the magazine hierarchy.
Yeah, we need to start hanging out with fancy magazine editors of smaller nations.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're bigger than you, fucker, in Monaco.
Luxembourg, Rolling Stone.
I could tell one similar story, which is just that I had this friend from high school who I actually don't talk to him anymore, but he works at Variety magazine, you know, which is an industry Hollywood industry mag, and he runs into my mom down in LA every once in a while because they live in the same neighborhood, and my name hasn't come up in whatever decades with this guy or whatever. And he asked, you know, when he ran into my mom, what I did for a living. And she told him, and she told me his reply was like, kind of this like, oh, the enthusiast press. Well, that's a pretty good place to be these days in publishing, which was sort of like a kind of condescending.
It was a damning,
like,
with faint praise.
Like, oh, but that's cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
All we want is a little respect, man.
Yeah.
Not really.
Whatever.
Just kidding. Respect. I get paid to talk about how shitty the seasonal aisle is at a drugstore.
That's
all you need.
We have great jobs here. If you don't understand it, then,
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Don't get no respect. Don't need
Last quick chance we can answer with just a few names, but Wabe Walker wants to know what books we're reading.
The
reason I bring that up is because before when in the course of an interview with various writers in the industry that handle the writing for games, a lot of them were mentioning that they were into Cormac McCarthy's The Road, which has been out. And so we talked about that, and I read it, and a lot of people were like, hey, that's great. And they PM'd me back saying, hey, thanks for that recommendation. So what you guys reading?
I am currently reading The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Classic science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Put the classic on there before you drop down that geek hierarchy.
Yeah. Classic.
Not based on the television show.
No.
I've got three books going at once, which is kind of how I do things.
That's how I do.
A nonfiction and fiction going at the same time.
Uh-huh.
So I'm finishing up a pretty great biography of Louis Armstrong. I read a lot of music books, and so this is a pretty great biography that goes into a lot of the history of New Orleans and early jazz, which is an interest of mine. So that's my nonfiction and fiction. I am doing what a lot of people are doing these days, and I'm going back through my Vonnegut library now that Kurt Vonnegut passed away. So I'm reading Cat's Cradle. And then third, I'm reading a really marvelous book by marvelous. It's just marvelous. why did I use that word?
A classic book.
I knew this guy, every time he was talking about something, he always used the word phenomenal. So we would always say that about him behind his back. That sandwich today was just phenomenal. this Salman Rushdie book called Harun and the Sea of Stories, which actually my daughter had read for her class, and she passed on to me, and it's a really brilliant Salman Rushdie book. So that's what I'm up to.
I mean, DC Comics Countdown.
That's all right.
Oh. I had to come up with something stupid.
We are,
but you did. It's fine. You already read that.
Huh? No, that's a new one. you're thinking 52.
But you are reading
it.
So
you're going to read it.
Yeah.
You already, yeah. Okay.
So you're not kidding.
It's ongoing.
Yeah, you will be reading that.
Now, let me see. What am I reading for reals? I was reading it and haven't gotten back to it yet. This is an old one, but I'm reading Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance.
Fine. Wow, that's been a long time. So
yeah,
11th grade.
And this.
Sorry, I didn't mean to say that like condescending.
Oh, God,
I, that,
Sean,
that's one. No,
I read that in high school.
No, but it's one that I've always wondered to like to go back to, like to see what.
Yeah, that'd be very.
Yeah, I wonder that too if it holds up.
It seemed really.
The Vonnegut's definitely holding
my life. I'm liking it.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is a little more geeky, but I just finished reading the first four volumes of the Penny Arcade collected editions.
Okay,
cool.
That's cool.
It's kind of fun going back and reading. They have like these commentaries. They're all annotated each strip from today's perspective.
When did it start, Penny Arcade? Now
it's mad old.
98, 99.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Damn.
I picked up the first volume in the store, and the art is just so off-putting because it's transformed just so much.
Yeah.
He's gotten so much better.
Yeah, entirely. I mean, that happens with almost every.
Sure.
I mean, remember
Calvin
the Simpsons?
And Hobbes,
definitely.
Or Simpsons. When they show like the early Simpsons episodes,
right? They
look
so crude.
Or before that, the Tracy Chapman show. Or
right.
Whatever. Not Tracy.
Tracy
Chapman,
Ullman.
Tracy Ullman.
Tracy Chapman.
I've got a shitty cartoon. I've got a shitty cartoon. It's a shitty tune. A shitty tune. So. Yeah, recovered on that nicely.
Yes.
But yeah, the old Penny Arcade comics do look really bad. And that's no, like, insult to them in the same way that, like, Matt, what is it, Groening? I never knew how you...
Yeah, Matt Groening.
Groening.
I don't think it's as jarring as the Simpsons.
It's just a compliment. They've gotten really, really good.
Art and the writing has gotten, I think, improved, since...
Well, it really fit in his groove now. I mean, he's got his fingerprint, He's got his signature style, and it looks great.
What about you, Sean? You brought this up.
This is reader mail. I'm reading. I do the same as you, where I get a bunch of books going in at a given time and mix. I'll have like a sort of an indulgence book, and then like a good piece of literature and a good piece of
of nonfiction. So the nonfiction right now is Robert Fisk's massive. I showed it to you. I was telling you to borrow it. The Great War for Civilization, and it's basically his. He was originally a Times, you know, from a London reporter, and then later in his career, because of some editorial differences, started writing for the Independent there. But his history of just experience of reporting in the Middle East, everything from Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, everything that's happened in Lebanon, Israel, Palestine, Iraq, Iran, it's just really, really monumental work. And it's really cool. I like it. Just finished Martin Amis's House of Meetings, which was another.
Is that his most recent one?
It just came out. Okay. Yeah. So I got I was a sucker about the hardcover. Which I try to not to do, especially with fiction, because I'll read it in 2 days, and I'm like, I just paid $30.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's hard. And it looks so nice in your
trade
shelf.
Stuff in.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and if you know anything about him, like, that's really cool. I don't know if I wouldn't recommend. Like, I mean, if you're consider yourself a really casual reader, the kind that, like, maybe you picked up the road and you're like, oh, this is cool. Like, you know, you have anything else? Like, for those people, I'd recommend No Country for Old Men, which is also by Cormac McCarthy. And that's a cool – I mean, that's an awesome book. I mean, it was like when he got off the big Border trilogy and wanted to just do something that was really quick and easy. It's just a complete ripper, you know. It almost reads like, you know, really, really high-quality crime fiction.
Right. Even the Border trilogy is not as hard, quote-unquote, as people make it out to be.
No, it's dense. Some of the language gets really broke, and I mean, there's a lot of sophisticated, not monkey business, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on.
If you can make your way through an issue of GFW, you can handle it.
Navigate the labyrinthine corridors of our...
And then for the light reading, I just zipped through a history of air combat, which I'm still into.
That doesn't sound like light reading.
Well, it was. It was like one of the Keegan Smithsonian anthologies I picked up at Half Price Books. You know,
I want to make an appendix to this.
Yes,
just because the delivery method's interesting. I'm reading. I haven't read it in a long time. Moby Dick, because it was brought up on our very own forums.
I've been thinking about reading it.
And I'm reading it.
Was Bowley reading it?
Yeah, this is kind of what brought it up. I'm actually reading it from the site called DailyLit.com, which emails you five-minute chunks of it every day
That's almost
a year.
Reading the Bible for old people, you know? Make it through the entire
thing. I was like, you know what? I'm going to try this out.
I got to get in on that. Is it like a book club?
No, it's free. It's just like, because it's just all like books that have been out long enough that they're, I think, public domain.
Yeah. I object to that, man. It's like, well, you're a lit major too, aren't you?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe, am I the only one in here?
No, that's
why I'm objecting. You should, like, come on, dude. It's basically turning... What should be like this like awesome experience of reading one of the best pieces of American literature into this like taking your pills and you got your daily reminder of like you know, read this page on Monday and then read this one.
Yeah, but a lot of the books in that
and you're like, this I have read manageable. It before. You know, it's
he's read it before.
You really don't to get some abs, you don't have to do this all day. You only do 20 minutes each day. But it's like, you know, you really just want to say, hey, I read Moby Dick. I want you to cherish it.
Right.
I want you to enjoy the experience of like just.
Yeah, somebody was making the point of when Oprah on her book club, it was some old classic. Mm-hmm. I don't know what book it was now. I forget. Maybe it was a Tolstoy book or something. Mm-hmm. And she was saying, this is what my pick is going to be. And she said to the viewer, she said, come on, you know, we'll get through this together.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone else made the point of like, boy, that just doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Well, you know, like reading shouldn't be that.
And if it is, and if it is a chore, then don't do it. It's not going to make your life any better, more enriched to be able to say you read them unless you're like actually, you know, engaged with the material and you're thinking about it. And you're like, okay, well, I'm getting something from this. But otherwise, if you're just zipping through to say, words are falling out of your memory
because it's on your checklist.
Like a checklist,
you're just wasting your fucking time. And get the soap opera magazine. You know,
right?
Get GFW.
You don't have to be
get our magazine.
If you're not interested in expanding your brain, read our magazine.
But that's bad because like you can only read one thing. I mean, I read a whole bunch of stuff.
You know, I've got three books sitting by the nightstand, and quite often what I pick up when I'm about to fall asleep is like Entertainment Weekly because that's all my brain can handle at that point of the night.
Right.
So even though I'm reading these other
Just different. Yeah, there's different times. I mean, sometimes you're in a mood. It's like anything, you know. Sometimes you're in a mood to play a long-ass, you know, Oblivion. Sometimes you want to play Pac-Man, whatever, the new edition that just came out.
Sometimes you want to read Archie Comics.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to read Bazooka Joe comics.
When you can't handle Archie.
Ryan and I are going to have a war between like fanboy Bazooka Joe fanboys and with some other comics that comes with gum.
I did want to read Moby Dick, though.
So, well, don't do it this way, Jeff.
Don't do it that way?
Don't do it
just... Because I've never read it.
You can get, we can get you the comic version.
Oh, awesome.
Borrow it from Ryan.
Pictures.
There she blows a hump like a snowhill.
My other summer project, I meant to say, when I'm finished with these three, is going to be Huck Finn. Because the last time I read that was in school as an assignment. Mm-hmm. So I want to read that now as an adult for fun.
When it's not forced upon you.
Exactly.
That changes things.
Mm-hmm.
I got some the comic book stuff too, which I don't even consider in my reading material because it's like I usually read them before I'm done reading them before I even get back home on the BART or something.
You don't count those, but that's like was Ryan's list.
But Ryan savors the art though on each page. He looks and tries to see, is that like a Bushima Spider-Man or is that more like
Mini licks the page.
No.
Hate you guys.
Speak up, dude. Come on, man. Flashback.
All right, we've been podcasting a long, long time.
Way too long.
We're going to go home now.
No, because there's so much that's getting edited out of this edition. It's only going to be 30 yes. minutes.
When you hear our lovely voices, you're going to be hearing an edited version of this week's podcast.
Yeah, maybe at the end of the year we'll save the cut part about Jeff's swimming pool story and put that back in next week.
That was a good one.
Okay, we'll catch you next week.
Yo, this shit is just starting. Welcome to round two. We promised you in the past that we would do a non-gaming related podcast, and here it comes now. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours.
This One Up podcast is brought to you by Games for Windows. Welcome to Better PC Gaming. Created with the idea that gaming should deliver more. Games for Windows branded titles bring you all the fun of gaming without all the work. And with the hottest titles around and Windows Vista compatibility, Games for Windows promises to deliver great new gaming experiences every time you play.